Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 1 million union members, retirees, and their families. Committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
If the Florida House has its way, the days of the state's official tourism marketing corporation could be numbered.
Allowing Visit Florida to sunset would be catastrophic to a state that counts tourism as the backbone of our economy.
Also tonight, the legislature's bill to crack down on human trafficking is on the move, although it seems to be morphing as it goes.
I'm hoping that at the next stop, I will be able to make an adjustment and amend that section of the bill.
We'll also follow the debate over campus free speech, hear about a Florida measles case that could be the precursor to a larger outbreak, and discover the topic of growth management has reemerged at the Capitol. I'm Tom Flanagan. It's the second day in the sixth week of the 2019 Florida legislative session. This is Capitol Report. Florida's tourism and marketing agency could be going away if the Florida House has its way. It comes as tourism remains the state's dominant industry and the state continues recovering from toxic algae blooms and hurricanes. Lynn Hatter has more.
Despite hurricanes Michael and Irma and the worst toxic algae bloom in a decade, Florida saw a record number of visitors last year. In addition to those from other states, Florida also saw gains in international tourists from Canada, the United Kingdom, and Brazil. But the numbers also show worsening trends. There were fewer visitors from Europe, South America, and Asia.
I realize, members, that this is the first cut at this. But like my colleague, I have some pretty serious concerns about where we are today in this current House budget.
North Florida Representative Loran Osley is arguing against a House plan that would effectively defund Visit Florida. The chamber wants to give the Tourism and Marketing Agency $19 million. That's enough money to keep it running until it expires in October.
Allowing Visit Florida to sunset would be catastrophic to a state that counts tourism as the backbone of our economy.
2 years ago, Visit Florida ended up in the crosshairs of then-Speaker Richard Corcoran over contracts with celebrities like Pitbull. The agency would not release its contract with the musician, which prompted a lawsuit. Ultimately, its CEO resigned. But before that, lawmakers were disgruntled about how much general revenue money was going to Visit Florida. Its budget went from about $25 million a year in 2004 to $76 million in 2018 under former Governor Rick Scott. The agency wants to stay at that level, and it's trying to prove its worth in areas that aren't the tourist hotspots.
Visit Florida helps us market on par with the coastal counties and grow our community and our tourism.
That's Washington County's Heather Lopez speaking in a video produced by Visit Florida.
The increase in Florida tourism has actually made our revenues come up in the last 3 years. Last year we saw a 10% increase in revenues overall. If Florida did not fund tourism marketing, we would lose a lot of businesses in our county, which would account for about 200 jobs and about $1 million in local and state taxes.
Obviously, the respective directors, including Dana Young, are doing their jobs and advocating for tourism in that case. And I think the House's position is clear.
That's House Appropriations Chairman Travis Cummings. Governor Ron DeSantis wants to keep Visit Florida funding intact at current levels, but neither the House nor Senate do that. And while House leaders appear content to let the agency fall by the wayside, the Senate would give it $50 million with a caveat. That money can't be spent on counties that ban sunscreen. Cummings says the issue is still up for negotiation.
You know, the governor as well as the Senate aren't proposing, what we are in that regard. And so we'll get through this week on the budget, hopefully pass a responsible budget, and that'll be included, and we'll get to conference and just have to see where we end up.
Lawmakers will soon begin the process of hammering out their budget differences in varying committees. Any issues left unresolved would go to House Speaker Jose Oliva and Senate President Bill Galvano to work out. I'm Lynn Hatter.
A Florida House bill that looks to crack down on human trafficking may be getting some changes before its next committee stop. Ryan Daly reports Representative Heather Fitzenhagen's bill passed the House Appropriations Committee today.
I am a survivor of human trafficking. I grew up in Central Florida and started being trafficked by my mother.
Savannah Parvu is a survivor who says she is in support of the House bill.
When I was 12, I started being sold out of hotels in Central Florida, and the staff at the hotels were aware of what was happening and actually assisted my trafficker.
Under the bill, a training program would be developed for hotels, other public lodging businesses, and massage parlors to detect human trafficking so it can be stopped. It also creates a new 4-hour training course for police officers as part of their basic recruitment. If officers fail to complete it, they would not be able to join the department. But one provision in the bill has some lawmakers and advocates raising eyebrows, including Democratic Representative Richard Stark.
Basically says provided immunity from liability for harm resulting from a massage or public lodging establishment, employee's failure to prevent, detect, or report suspected human trafficking. And I remember that wasn't on the original bill. So I'd like to know why we add that in there.
The section Stark is referencing would allow hotels and massage parlors to avoid lawsuits even when employees don't take action.
You know, it's like giving hotels immunity.
Fitzenhagen says that was an effort to get the measure closer to the companion bill currently moving through the Senate.
That is something that was placed in the bill as a parallel to the Senate version of the bill, but I am equally concerned about providing immunity. I too am not trying to have a new cause of action, but I'd rather have the existing common law actions and anything that would be applicable to this type of egregious behavior to remain in place.
But Fitzenhagen says she wants to make a change.
So I'm hoping that at the next stop I will be able to make an adjustment and amend that section of the bill.
The Fort Myers Republican says there could be other changes on the horizon for her bill.
It is my intent to adjust the bill to take out the immunity provisions. I would also like to make a few changes potentially to the massage section to make sure that that's clear, that there are many reputable massage organizations that would like to see some changes and strengthening in that area, and potentially to add restaurants in if that's possible, because that's where a lot of the recruitment goes on in human trafficking.
The specifics of what those changes might look like are unclear, as Fitzenhagen wasn't available for an interview following Tuesday's committee meeting. National Organization for Women lobbyist Barbara Devane says her organization doesn't support the bill for two reasons. One is the issue of potential immunity for businesses.
These hotels, restaurants, and other establishments, once they go through the training, they are given immunity from prosecution. No cause of action against them ever for allowing human trafficking in their hotel, restaurant, etc., their establishment.
The other reason Devane opposes the bill is a provision in the Senate version that creates a registry of those convicted of engaging in the exchange of sex for money.
These women who are sex workers, prostitutes, would also wind up on the registry. And we would be criminalizing women.
Devane says she was disappointed last year when what she calls the best human trafficking bill ever was killed by its sponsor, Lauren Book, at its very last committee stop. Book is sponsoring the bill that's moving through the Senate now. Fitzenhagen's House bill also creates a support organization under the Department of Legal Affairs that would assist the Statewide Council on Human Trafficking, chaired by Attorney General Ashley Moody. The bill will next head to the House Judiciary Committee. I'm Ryan Daly.
With the growing season in its final months, estimated citrus production in Florida slid as the U.S. Department of Agriculture posted its latest update today. Projected orange production went down about 0.6 percentage point in the latest monthly forecast, while the amount of grapefruit being produced fell by 9% from March to April. A Senate panel today approved a bill that would threaten local governments with hefty fines if they prohibit the sale of certain sunscreens. Although lawmakers dropped an initial part of the bill that would have prevented local officials from banning plastic straws, the bill targets sunscreens in an attempt to keep Key West from enforcing an ordinance that would ban the sale and use of sunscreens that contain oxybenzone, a chemical that a study says harms coral reefs. That ordinance is set to go into effect January 1st of 2021. Still to come on Capitol Report, a debate over campus free speech has conservative students charging liberal bias.
I'm a conservative, so it's kind of also very intimidating because you see a lot of stuff on social media and it's like people getting beat up for wearing like a Trump hat.
America's spreading measles outbreak reaches the Sunshine State, and public health officials say the reason the disease is on the move is simple and avoidable.
There have been a lot of people that they have opted out not to receive the vaccination or not to immunize their kids.
And lawmakers want to stop bad actors from giving unsuspecting consumers bad loans.
So the only people that would not want to be licensed are the people that want to hide something.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by The Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. AbleTrust.org.
You may have already heard about America's rapidly growing measles epidemic. Until now, Florida seemed to be immune. But as we hear from WLRN's Christine DeMatte, that no longer seems to be the case.
As five U.S. states deal with outbreaks of measles, a case was reported recently in Broward County. While one individual case does not, of course, mean an outbreak, South Florida health officials are stressing the importance of vaccinations. And they want to make sure people here are well informed about the disease and who might be at risk. We're talking with Dr. Alejandro Izava Quintero. He specializes in pediatric infectious diseases at Broward Health Medical Center's Sala Foundation Children's Hospital. Dr. Izava Quintero, first, what is measles and what are some complications from it that could make it dangerous?
Measles is a very contagious infectious disease that is caused by a virus, and it can cause serious complications, particularly in people that they have a weak immune system.
In the United States, about what percentage of the population is vaccinated against the disease? And generally, when are those immunizations administered?
In the United States, I would say 87, 90% of the people are immunized. But right now, we are having an issue that in the last few years, because of misconceptions about side effects or problems with the vaccine, particularly with the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine. There have been a lot of people that they have opted out not to receive the vaccination or not to immunize their kids. And for that reason, we're seeing these new outbreaks in multiple states in the United States. The vaccine is called MMR, that it means measles, mumps, and rubella. And the vaccine is given initially between 12 and 15 months, and then you give a booster between 4 and 6 years.
And doctor, what are the first symptoms of measles?
The first symptoms are going to be basically fever. You can have cough, you can have runny nose, you can have watery eyes or conjunctivitis, you can have sensitivity to the light in the eyes, you can have sneezing, and those are basically the first symptoms that you are going to have. After that, you are going to have a reddish brown rash that is going to begin in the back of the ears, and then it's going to spread from the head, then to the trunk, and then to the extremities.
Doctor, suppose you're an adult and you honestly don't know if you had the MMR vaccine when you were a kid. How can you find out if, in fact, you did?
If you are an adult and then you want to know if you have received the MMR vaccine, you can contact your doctor and the doctor can order a test in the blood just to measure antibodies against measles, and that will tell you if you have received the vaccine or if you were born before 1957, if you already had the disease.
And if you have been vaccinated, are you then set for life or do you need a booster at some point?
If you receive two doses of the MMR vaccine, you are immunized and then you should be protected and you don't need any boosters.
Again, a single case in Broward is certainly not an outbreak, but is there anything health officials in Broward County are doing differently after the discovery of that one case?
Well, once you have a case, you have to determine first if this case was acquired or not in the United States. In this case, the case is an international case, so it came from outside the United States. So once you identify the patient, you have to look for the contact. So you have to know where this patient has been. So you have to contact all those areas, and then you have to do an investigation to see who has been in contact with this patient so people can be advised, and then they can be find if they have been immunized or not, in order to stop the spreading the disease.
We've been talking with Dr. Alejandro Isava Quintero. He specializes in pediatric infectious diseases at Broward Health Medical Center's Sala Foundation Children's Hospital. I'm Christine DiMatte.
The Florida House is considering a bill that would require an annual report on intellectual freedom and viewpoint diversity at the state's public universities. The measure has drawn criticism from some and praise from others. Morgan Martin takes a closer look at the history of the issue.
Young people tend to be more liberal. We are optimistic. We have our entire future ahead of us.
I don't really like when I'm walking down Legacy and there's like a bunch of people trying to give me flyers and stuff.
Of course, it can be kind of intimidating because they are your professor and that's somebody you're learning from.
That was Florida State students Matt Sipperstein and Hannah Pay and Florida A&M student Skylar Sturgis. There is a growing view from some Americans that public colleges and universities have a bias toward liberal points of view. It's significantly higher for Republicans who say universities are going off course. The Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, or FIRE, is a nonpartisan group that defends civil rights on college campuses. Spokesman Nico Perino says its study found conservative students are less likely to share their political views.
Conservative students, we find, are 14 percentage points more likely to feel uncomfortable expressing their opinions in the classroom than their liberal peers. But at the same time, we find that conservative students are much less interested in withdrawing a guest speaker's invitation to speak at a campus if that speaker is controversial. We find that 78% of very liberal students support the withdrawal of certain controversial invitations to guest speakers.
In 2017, University of Florida students booed guest speaker and white nationalist Richard Spencer. Protesters outnumbered the supporters. In 2016, former Breitbart editor Milo Yiannopoulos was greeted by protesters ahead of his event at Florida State University. Informal interviews with Florida A&M and FSU students show differences at the schools. FAMU student Roderick Bryant says he is comfortable voicing his positions on campus.
I am comfortable expressing my political views on campus because I do feel like there are like-minded students and peers that are just like me that feel the need to sometimes express that. And I do feel like I won't be criticized or kind of like deterred from doing so.
And while some FSU students felt the same, Gatlin Lowe says free speech comes with social backlash.
I'm a conservative, so it's kind of also very intimidating because you see a lot of stuff on social media and it's like people getting beat up for wearing like a Trump hat.
Universities haven't always been perceived as liberal. FAMU history professor Reginald Ellis says the shift in view began in the 1960s.
There was an idea of how to galvanize the, quote, liberal base, and that their concept was a more study academic way of a top-down approach of looking at it, while the conservative movement went to more of a grassroots-up concept, the unforgotten man, if you will, concept of their movement. And we really saw that with the election of Ronald Reagan in the 1980s.
Ellis says colleges and universities began reflecting the change.
More underrepresented groups such as women, individuals in the LGBTQ community, and African Americans became the base of the liberal movement. And so you start to see colleges and universities start to give voice to these different groups. And so you start to see the creation of different disciplines such as the African American studies and gender studies.
The issue has also gained steam from high-profile leaders who have their take on it. Recently, President Donald Trump signed an executive order on campus free speech. And Florida Governor Ron DeSantis recently told the state university system governing board he doesn't want the schools going the way of Berkeley. I'm Morgan Martin.
Gina Jordan has been checking out the legislature's schedule.
Here's a look at what's happening Wednesday at the Capitol. The full House will take up numerous issues, including changes to the longtime insurance practice known as Assignment of Benefits, or AOB. The practice involves policyholders signing over claims to contractors who then pursue payment from insurers. The insurance industry and business groups contend AOB has become riddled with fraud and litigation, driving up insurance premiums. Supporters say AOB helps ensure that insurance companies pay claims properly. The House will also consider several health care bills, including a proposal that seeks to clear the way for importing cheaper prescription drugs from Canada. Governor Ron DeSantis has made a priority of a drug importation program, which is backed by House Speaker Jose Oliva. The Senate will also hold a floor session, and committees will take on a range of issues. A moratorium on oil drilling in the eastern Gulf of Mexico may be extended to help prevent conflicts with military training. Lawmakers are being asked to draw up a plan for a strategic fuel reserve to help deal with hurricanes and other disasters. The possibility of creating such a reserve drew attention after Hurricane Irma forced massive evacuations in 2017, causing runs on gas stations. An 8-year term limit on county school board members is under consideration. The measure is a proposed constitutional amendment that would ask voters in 2020 to approve the term limits. The Florida Constitution Revision Commission gets more scrutiny as a bill seeks to abolish the panel that meets every 20 years. The commission drew criticism last year when it bundled unrelated issues into single constitutional amendments. And finally, the state may gain regulatory authority over vacation rental properties. That means municipalities would not be able to create their own local regulations for companies like Airbnb. That's some of what's happening tomorrow in the Florida legislature. I'm Gina Jordan.
You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, as the growth rate in Florida climbs, one state lawmaker says it's time to take another look at the community development rules that govern the Sunshine State. Regan McCarthy has more.
Brandon Republican Senator Tom Lee says one area that needs to be cleaned up has to do with licensing mortgage lenders.
The language was intended to prevent unlicensed mortgage lenders from defrauding Florida citizens, to deal with some potential money laundering issues that are of concern in Southeast Florida. It's also the subject of a bill by Senator DeDeo that was heard and TP'd in banking and insurance.
This is a picture in my county, Miami-Dade County, of people just putting up handwritten signs trying to get people to do a loan for their home.
That's Miami Democratic Senator Annette Tadeo explaining her bill to the Banking and Insurance Committee. She says bad actors are taking advantage of uninformed citizens because of an exemption in state law. Right now, unregulated mortgage brokers can lend money to people for the purpose of a business loan to buy residential property.
This has resulted in regular consumers, not sophisticated business persons, setting up LLCs, often with the help of these lenders, and entering into unfair, unregulated lending agreements with much higher fees and costs. These unregulated area has also been used to target consumers who have not been able to obtain traditional loans to purchase a home, and they end up being targeted by this unregulated area of the market.
In an effort to address that, Lee now has a bill carrying the language from Tadeo's measure. The bill redefines the term mortgage loan to include residential mortgage loans made for business purposes and requires people offering those loans to be licensed through the Office of Financial Regulation. But Alex Nunez, a developer in Leon County, says the bill could stop people like him from doing the work they do.
We feel that that will greatly impact negatively our ability to help renovate dilapidated homes in the area and provide housing to folks in the area as well. Certain banks will not loan on these properties. And so we look to some of these private lenders to help give us these funds to be able to renovate these homes and provide those the housing to folks in the local area that need it.
But Tadeo says she doesn't understand why being licensed would stop lenders from working with people like Nunez.
Being licensed is something that you should be. I mean, this is what we're doing. This is exactly why you should be licensed. You shouldn't be lending money without some kind of oversight so that we can make sure that we don't have the kind of situations that we do have and have been reported by the media and have been covered over and over, where there is definitely money laundering going on. So the only people that would not want to be licensed are the people that want to hide something.
Lee says the goal is not to stop people from getting capital from private lending sources. He says he's met extensively with people on both sides of the issue and is working to find a good path in the middle. Lee's bill has one committee stop left to go. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaise Ganey, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, Regan McCarthy, and Sean Mulcahy. Thanks also to Morgan Martin and Christine Demite from WLRN. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Be sure to join us again every weeknight throughout the Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care, on the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 1 million union members, retirees, and their families. Committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org.